Welcome to Wood Talk. Now, here are three guys who think true grit starts at 220. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, it's Wood Talk number 413 for October 9th, 2017. On today's show, we're talking about woodworkers fighting cancer, dealing with pests in the shop, stable hardwoods, and what finish to use on a workbench. And today's show is sponsored by our friends at Brusso. You know, I'm actually going to be using some Brusso hardware pretty soon. I've got a jewelry box project coming up, and I'm thinking knife hinges would be good for that. I haven't had a chance to use their hardware in a while, so I'm really looking forward to it. Make sure you check out Brusso's Photo Extra newsletter. It's a weekly update from Brusso dedicated to customer-submitted... Why is this not long enough? This stupid single column thing. I can't read. Believe it or not, I am reading this. I know it doesn't seem like I am, but I'm reading this stuff. It's a weekly update from Brusso dedicated to customer-submitted photos. Brusso's customers work on detailed projects, including ring boxes, humidors, keepsakes, gun boxes, and furniture, of course. It's an excellent source of inspiration for your next project. The newsletter is short, quick, and has great photos, and it's delivered right to your inbox. So if you want to sign up, go to brusso.com/photo extra. That's all one word, brusso.com/photo extra. And I look forward to using your hardware pretty soon, Brusso. It's good stuff. You open that little plastic package, and you just go, oh, this is the stuff right here. And you see that extra steel screw in the package, which is a nice treat. You guys notice that too?
Oh, yeah. That's nice. I like right? that.
So you can use that to plow through the holes first before you potentially damage your brass screws. It's a really nice bonus. We have some people to thank on Patreon too. Give me a second to pull those up. And by some people, I mean one person. John Malcolm. You know, it's almost like we said we're doing less stuff, we're doing less shows, and then people stopped wanting to give us money. That's weird how that works.
Yeah, I know.
But it's fair. Yeah. It's fair. We got what we deserved. Maybe not.
Which is?
Less money. So, John Malcolm, thank you so much for helping us out. And if you want to help the show stay on the air like those folks did, that folk did. That's patreon.com/woodtalk, and you can get all the information on little bonuses and things you can get by supporting us on a monthly basis. We do appreciate it. And let's get to what's on the bench, shall we, gentlemen?
Yep. I'll go first. Looks like you got some picture frames on your bench still. You haven't moved those yet?
I got to clean up the shop, man. I've been stuck inside the office and haven't gotten back in here. They're sitting where they were when I photographed them.
It's exactly the same layout, isn't it?
They're just arranged, ready to go. So I did my resin embedded frames with the resin casting in the center and got those all done. That was for the Woodworkers Fighting Cancer drive, which we'll talk a little bit more about in What's New. Someone actually requested that we give a little history on that, so I'm glad to do it. But this is going on all October. Anyone who wants to build a frame, and you don't have to have the resin casting in the middle. I know a lot of people may not want to mess with epoxy. You could do just kind of a little hot glue action in the middle and just like put little decorations and things inside the frame. It's a super simple project and very easy to help out with the charity this year. So the cool thing is if you submit a picture of your frame by October 31st, we will donate $1 on your behalf. If you do a build video on YouTube, we will donate $5 on your behalf. Ooh. And if you use, there's a new app called Giddy, and if you post a video or a picture to the Giddy app, they will donate $2 on your behalf. So that's actually a potential for $7 worth of donations made to the charity on your behalf, all by building a simple frame, which is a fun project for the family. Or if you want to make it a memory shadow box kind of thing, you could certainly do that as well. So
what if I do a 5-part build series?
$5. $5. Today we're making one miter joint.
Is it more if it's in 4K?
Yeah. Well, you know what? The resolution does count, so maybe.
What if they're on different channels?
Because if I do it in 4K, it's got to be 5 parts long because of the size of each file.
Of course. We have questions like that too, where the one guy is a doctor and he said he wants to build all the frames and then give them to all of his nurses to then do the decoration, and will each one of those count? You know, we've got to figure out like all of these particular cases and like which ones will we count, which ones won't we count? So it gets a little confusing. But ultimately I think if each person decorates one on their own, that would count as, one each. And then we would count, each one for $1.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I've got a few kids.
It's going to get expensive. Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, I guess if you have a couple kids, you make a couple of frames and you could take a picture with each kid with their frame, each one would count.
All right.
You guys are going to cost
me a bunch of frames to my wife's school.
You're going to cost me a lot of money.
It's like when Girl
money.
Scout cookie time comes around. Right. Show up and
let's see how generous Mark really is.
Hey, it's going to, we're on the hook here, whatever happens. So, so I'm also preparing for a talk, like next week or maybe the week after. I got to look at the calendar, but that the Denver Woodworking Club, Woodworkers Guild, or whatever they call it, going to talk a little bit about finishing there, which should be kind of fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull a Cremona here. I'm going to talk.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you were poo-pooing guilds a couple months ago.
No, I was.
What happened?
Well, it's my local guild, and I can't judge them yet because I haven't actually attended, and I haven't met anyone there. So,
it's your local guild. You're going for the first time to be a speaker, and you're not even a member.
Wow.
Well, come on.
Wow.
That's pretty something.
Well, dude, I just moved here. What do you want me to do?
You've been there a year. I don't want to tell me I just moved there.
Oh, that's true.
Do you have an appearance agent and a performance agent?
Yes. Yeah. It's Nicole Spagnolo is one of them, and Nicole R. Spagnolo is the other one. Okay. So the other thing is I have to design a jewelry box. That's coming up in the guild. Haven't even lifted a finger for that. I've got – this project is like supposed to start next week, and I've got people going, hey, what's this thing going to look like? And I say, I don't know because I haven't designed it yet. So it'll be a surprise. It'll be a surprise for everybody. So that's it. That's nice. It for me. Matt, what do you got going on?
Oh, speaking of the guild, I guess I'm trucking through the high boy. Yay. Right now. That's that's a thing in itself. Where am I right now? I got the drawer dividers installed in the upper case, and then I did the scroll board. You know, the thing that looks phallic.
Yes.
Which everyone reminds me that it's super phallic. Mm-hmm. But and they're acting like I'm the first one to do that. I'm like the people back
you might
hundred
be,
years ago.
You might be the first one they've seen.
I think this might be what it is.
Yeah, we're talking about YouTube.
This is a very common like design.
Yeah,
on that period. So it kind of makes you wonder, like, what exactly that came from? Like, who was like, "This is a good
idea."
Oh,
I know where it came from. I'll send you a text later, Matt. Show you where it came from.
Somebody with a very good sense of humor back in the day.
And you're not the first one to do it, Matt. Didn't you see Mark's Moana, like Maui hook video? Come on.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
I could not get away from that thing looking like a little wiener. There's nothing I could do.
Even when you wrapped it in a rope, still looked that
it
way.
It still looked like a little wiener, but you know, what are you going to do?
Oh, man. So the other thing I want to mention too, I think you guys will appreciate, and I think we're going to talk about this on the next show, is last weekend I built a couple of apple presses. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about this in the past. We're like, if we want to build something, we're like, kind of like feel like, I don't know, like if it, ashamed is not the right word for it, but like we missed out if we don't film it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't film that because I found the secret to being successful with that. Build something you already built and just tell people to go watch the video, a thing you already did last year.
Right.
You can do your woodworking and not have to worry about toting a camera around. And I tell you what, that feeling is very weird.
Is it?
I'm so used to now not thinking about the project first, thinking about the shot first and thinking about the camera setup first, and then the shot comes second. And all the time I spend between every single operation moving the camera around, and that's gone. You know, like you can literally fly through things. I'm like, this is crazy. I used to be fast at woodworking.
Well, you're right on the heels of the European chair thing that you did, you know, so it's I think it might be sending you down the wrong path here. Life is not that easy, Matt. It is.
I'm not saying I'm going to change anything. I'm just saying that I think once in a while, it might be nice for us to be able to just get out in the shop and build something without having to worry about the camera all the time and to not feel bad about doing that. Build something you already built.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
That's a good idea.
Well, I have a solution for that. Since I guess it's my turn.
Yeah, go.
I'm working on this this wall mirror for the hand tool school, but I'm gathering materials to build a perch stool. And my solution is just build it live because
that works too.
I just set up the cameras, hit start the stream, and go to work. And now I've gotten to the point. The only thing I have to do occasionally is switch cameras through my broadcasting software. Mm-hmm. You know, for tight and wide, but mm-hmm. it actually works pretty well. You know, mm-hmm. you've got to spend some time setting up the camera angles ahead of time, put a little bit of thought into like
one or two camera angles. You set it and basically yeah. forget it, I guess.
Set it and forget it. And if you have, you know, a production assistant, a Nicole Spagnolo or something like that, she can sit there and, you know, switch the camera angles for you. And it actually, yeah, I built that bookcase in January. And I remember thinking that at the time, like, hey, this is going really fast. Like, cause you're not having to stop and switch a camera angle or anything like that, because it was rolling. You know, there was a live shot there with the chat room and everything. So yeah, I'm going to do that again. I'm going to build the perch stool next Saturday, the 14th, high noon Eastern time. I'm going to fire up the stream and start riving out some legs and spend some time with the lathe and turn out legs. Essentially, I'm building like the bottom half of a Windsor chair, except taller. You know, it's a stool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically a perch style, so it's got that kind of lean forward aspect, so it's like good for your posture and all that fun stuff. So
nice.
Yeah. Fun. I have no idea how long it's going to take. I mean, probably just, it's not like I'm going to be doing like a 6 hour.
It'll be 36 hours. Shannon will be like, please send in your donations now.
I'm going to do like, you know, an hour and what I get done in that hour, and then kind of say, okay, rinse and repeat. You know, there's three legs. So I will probably get through riving out and turning let's be honest, maybe one leg.
Yeah.
In the course of an hour when you're talking to a chat room and stuff like that. But the good news is the other two legs are, the other back leg is the same everything, same dimensions, same everything. Front leg is a little bit shorter. So it's just a matter of, you know, cutting the same things on the lathe, just in a slightly compressed version. Sunday, I will probably do all the boring of the holes, the resultant angles, and the reaming of the tenons or the mortises. And actually get like a flat plank up and seated. If I have time, I'll move on to the stretchers. And then I'll probably go into the next weekend to do the carving of the seat. So I guess.
Doesn't Kosman do this with his online thing where basically he's building projects and doing things, but it's all real time?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he does, because I know he's got a camera person that helps him. And I've heard from people that that's all it is. You're seeing these things in real time. So when you're looking at, like, you get 10 hours of content, well, it's actually 10 hours of, like, literally being there for the 10-hour process of building this thing. But yeah, I think that's his approach to it as well.
I mean, you got to do it right. I mean, you basically watch a lot of Woodwright Shop episodes and see like how Roy manages to move from topic to topic to topic to make it somewhat entertaining.
Sure.
There's an art in that. You know, it's also exhausting, but
yeah,
I'm always impressed that he like nails the timing. Like, what is it, like 22 minutes? It's like, I start the project, I start the episode, it's like straight through, and then I'm done right on time.
Yeah. You really got to have some preparation for that. It almost reminds me of like cooking shows, you know, where you're like, okay, we're going to put this in the oven, and then here's the finished one. You pull out
Surprise!
This beautiful baked apple pie.
Yeah, well, I actually got a behind the scenes look at that when I was at the Woodwright School. Roy had the bench like right behind me, which you want to talk about distracting, like trying to work while Roy Underhill is right over your shoulder, like cracking jokes the whole time, trying to screw you up essentially. But he was building the infield shaker cupboard, which he did like the following season. It was probably like season 30 or something like that. And I actually got to see, I think he made like six different versions of that. Like, while I was there for the week building a Windsor chair, Roy built that infield cupboard to some extent six times so that he was able to have the setups to be able to go, okay, here's how we shape the bottom curve. And when you're done that, you know, and here's a whole other
this
setup.
This is how it should look.
Right. Didn't David Mark say the same thing, Mark? Like,
yes.
He had to have like four or five different versions of the same project.
Yeah, that's how I got that coffee table from him. He actually sent me one of the coffee tables that was made on the show.
I got six of these.
But it was like, it was sitting in storage, and it was like three quarters. Actually, it was actually completely constructed. It just didn't have a finish on it. And it was one that was used to show on video prior to the finish. So yeah, he used to have to do tons of that stuff. I know Tommy, when I went to Boston to do the show, they had the same situation. There were like 20 versions of every possible step and iteration that they had to prepare all that stuff ahead of time so they could do this in one day. It's crazy.
Wow.
I had no fun.
All right. Yeah. I changed what I said, Matt. It's not easier.
Well, when you do it the way we do it, you know, two cameras and you just go live and it is what it is, a different story. Okay. So let's get to what's new. And this is where we'll talk a little bit about the woodworkers fighting cancer thing. So I actually had a question from Nick. He says, wait a minute. That's not the right question. I copy and pasted the wrong question there. So this one, there was a question that someone asked me, what is the history of woodworkers fighting cancer? And I put a question about someone's workshop here. So let's pretend I actually read that question. So yeah, Woodworkers Fighting Cancer started, 2010, I believe it was. So there was a gentleman by the name of Dwayne Moore who emailed me and was going through treatment for pancreatic cancer, I believe. And he was trying to create some things for his kids, and his prognosis was not great at the time. And he was just looking to get some of these things done. So to help him, he was trying to do modifications of a blanket chest build, one of Rockler's plans. And I was like, you know what? I could do more than just kind of give you advice on this. I'll make this my next project, and I'll actually make a video that everyone can follow. And this would actually be really intended for him as a specific how-to for him to get the job done. So that was kind of what started the relationship. We had a lot of emails back and forth, and really great guy, great family. And we decided to go out and visit him, and went to his shop and did a little bit of, just instructional stuff, hanging out in his shop. And from that point on, he passed away shortly after that. And we decided that this we would take everything we've done online once a year and direct it into, cancer charities and try to make this, turning all of this stuff that we've created, this community that we've rallied behind, woodworking content, and see if we can't turn it into something, awesome for charity. And it really all goes back to Dwayne and his family. And I think his son follows some of our live broadcasts once in a while. I get to hear from them, but a great bunch of people. And since then, we've done this every year. And now in 2017, we've raised, I think we're about to hit the $100,000 mark. For total funds.
That's cool.
Right. And it's like, we can't even take credit for this because it was our idea, but it was really every year it's the community that's building things that allow us to pledge dollars for those builds. And now the companies that are getting involved, the auctions are one of the things that takes our totals. We always hit our goal because of these things, where tool companies are basically just giving us a tool. We auction it off. Somebody who needs that tool buys it. They usually wind up paying full price, if not more than full price. But the entire amount of funds, goes directly to the charity. So all these companies are either getting a little promotion for it, but they're also able to help out with a good cause. So wrap everything together, and every year we raise about 15 grand is usually our goal. And we give that directly to various cancer charities. So this year we are contributing to the Jimmy Fund, and that's a fund that directly funds the Dana-Farber Institute. And so some years we support research, some years we support care. And there's different organizations out there that just try to make people comfortable or make things easier for them as they go through like this incredibly difficult battle in their lives, and also support for the families. So it's something that's really special to Nicole and I. We have a lot of folks in our family who are, either have passed away from a cancer-related illness or are currently undergoing treatment for cancer, including both of our fathers. So yeah, cancer sucks. Everybody knows that. And it's hard to find anyone whose life is not directly touched by it. So I can't think of a better cause for us to get behind. So that's what it is. Go to woodworkersfightingcancer.com. All the history is there, as well as previous builds. You could see everything that people built in the past, and you could find out how to get involved for this year. And we hope everybody will build along, because it's definitely a good cause.
Right on. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's a feel good thing. I'll tell you, this time of year, it makes us feel like everything that we've been doing for 10 years, over a decade, if all we could say is that we've been able to contribute tons of money to cancer research, I would say we've succeeded in what we set out to do.
All we've done is given a bunch of money to cancer research.
Like, what I'm saying is, all of the woodworking stuff, if that's the end result of it, it was totally worth it.
Awesome.
So, I don't know what to do with this questionnaire. I'll figure that out later.
With that question.
Ignore that.
Much less impressive than $100,000 raised for cancer research.
All charity is good charity.
is another little charity. One of my Angel School members, Ernie Stevenson, his site is grandpaslittlefarm.com. And he has been restoring auger bits for years. Like, if you want to buy a bunch of auger bits for your brace that look like they're brand new, but they're hundreds of years old. I mean, he makes them shiny and pretty and everything, but he's also started doing this with a bunch of other old tools. And he decided he wanted to create like a starter kit, a jack plane with like multiple blades, just like the perfect thing to give a new woodworker to say, here's all the plane you need right now. It's a couple of blades for scrub work and for finishing work and joining work. He even includes like a screwdriver and a little coin driver. And he had custom made chip breakers done. He restored this jack plane to the point where you'd swear it was just made by Stanley yesterday, like brand new Japanning, perfectly shiny. He turned a Madrone handle, shaped a Madrone tote. It looks gorgeous. And he's decided he wants to auction it off and give the funds to the American Red Cross for hurricane relief. Mm. So he contacted me and said, you know, would it be cool if you announced this on like one of your live broadcasts? And I said, heck yeah. In fact, I'll throw in a semester of the hand tool school, just kind of sweeten the pot. Then he came up with what he called his short kit, because there's a lot of people who already have a jack plane. So the short kit is basically the three blades and the custom chip breaker and the screwdrivers and everything. And all you have to do is add jack plane. So those two things are being auctioned off right now. It started up yesterday and we did it this way just because we were uncertain. And frankly, there was very little time. We were uncertain who to give it to, because some of the charities obviously have operating expenses and stuff. And it was, Ernie was pretty clear that he wanted 100% of the funds to go right there. So check it out. It's actually, I found out later, it's the exact same auction service that Mark is using. Right. So yay.
That's a good one.
That kind of worked out well. So I think, what is it? 32auctions.com/jackplane starter kit. But I'll include a link here. Go check it out. It runs through next Thursday, 6:30 PM Thursday, the 12th. Yeah. The 12th is when it shuts down. Mm-hmm. I think we're like up to $250 or something last I checked last night. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Can't beat that, man. Gotta love charity. Yeah. Makes you feel good. Okay. So yay. Let's get into our kickbacks here.
Yay.
Got one from Rich. He says, I found Mark's reasoning not to purchase your last machine first sound, given the question on purchasing the Super Duper Incra router table first. And so my kickback is to request that Mark clarify why he disagreed with Matt's analogous reasoning on the purchase of the Jet Portable Combo. We can't get away from this. I love
this.
It
is still coming back.
I saw in Facebook, one of the Facebook groups, there was a question about it. I'm like, I'm not even going in there.
Don't do it.
Okay, so the Jet Portable Combo Jointer Planer. The latter purchase was discussed in the last couple of months. I'll add that my reasoning to purchase the 10-inch combo jet jointer planer about a year ago was similar. Buy into a modest unit, learn, and then consider purchasing up. I'm space constrained and so can only consider combo units. Finally, my vote is that we use the names your parents gave you and let your close friends tag you with a nickname. So I guess our stupid nickname game that we've been playing. And he says, thanks for the hard work putting the podcast together. I've learned a lot, Rich. Well, thanks, Rich. Appreciate that. And, you know, you notice we don't really call each other those names. That is what other people call us. I still call these goons by their given names. Okay. So, here's the difference. Matt's gearing up for this.
I'm not gearing up for anything. You say your thing and I'm done.
Okay. The difference here is when I say don't buy your last tool first, I'm saying buy a more modest version. What I'm referring to is a more modest version that actually works. Okay. The problem is, and I know some people have had success.
You're just gonna fan the fire so even more.
I love it. There are people who have had success with that particular joiner planer combo unit, but there are many, many others who have not. So my point is, yeah, sure, you can go for a joiner planer combo, but try the floor standing jet version. And Grizzly, I believe, has a comparable one. They're a little more expensive, certainly. I think they're like $1,500 or something like that. But the thing is, you have to get something that actually works and works well. If you buy so cheap on your first tool, you go the other so far in the other direction that you actually buy something that impedes your ability to get the job done, that's bad, right? There is a lower limit to how far you should go with your first modest purchase. So that's why I'm saying read the reviews, decide for yourself, take what, you know, Matt and some others who've had success with it, take what they said into account, but also look at the people who want to stay as far away from that machine as possible and think about what you might be able to do to get something that does something similar. Maybe it's a little bit more money, but at least you're getting both of the tools that will not frustrate the crap out of you. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with that. I won't even give Matt a chance to rebuttal. There's no need for it.
I've already said my thing. Like
you said your piece
10 episodes ago.
Yeah. So go back and listen again if you want to hear the counter
argument. Unless someone wants me to clarify, they're welcome to send a kickback, and I will clarify some more, I guess.
We'll do that next week, then.
Yeah, there you go. Next time we'll be doing the thing for Matt.
There you
Matt,
go.
Explain your opinion some more.
That's what we need here.
We need to throw in some miter saw talk, too, just to round it out.
Yeah, really good.
Domino, we have...
Okay, so we have a...
Domino or pocket holes? What do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's go to Chase's kickback about sore hands.
Hey guys,
Chase. Oh, poop biscuits. Hold on a second. Wow. See, the thing is, I listen to music and stuff, and that screws up my setup for podcasting. Okay.
Here, and I just wanted to give a. Hey guys, Chase from CN Woodwork here, and I just wanted to give a little feedback about a sore hands question you had a little bit ago. Basically, I'd say you guys are on the right track. Watching how hard you're holding tools, how much pressure you're putting that's unnecessary, makes a huge difference as far as the fatigue I feel in my hands. Now, I may be on the opposite side of the spectrum, being that the gloves I wear are usually extra large to double extra large, but the amount of work that I'm doing on a regular basis really makes my hands sore at the end of the day. The other thing I've noticed that really helps is I got some of those hand squeeze exercisers. They're kind of the spring type exercisers for your hands. And I'll do 10 to 20 minutes of exercise at night if I notice my hands are sore. And the next day I won't have much soreness at all. So that really helps. I think they sell them in different sizes and different weights. So definitely check that out. And I hope that helps. And I want to say thanks for the show, guys. Always valuable information here. And just for the record, Shannon's Lumber is my favorite segment on the show. Keep it up, guys. Have a good one.
But is it because of the song or the content? Yeah. That's what I want to know.
It's got to be because of the song. I hear that all the time. Like, I love that Lumber update. You got to do more of that. And it's like, okay. It's funny. People find that really interesting. And I thought it was going to be boring as all get out.
Well, here
so,
we go.
There we go.
Shannon's Lumber Industry Update.
So there's really nothing to update this week, right?
What did we say the update was? Saws are still running. Trees are still being
They're
cut
still
down.
Cutting down trees.
Still cutting down trees.
And tune in next week.
Where we'll cut down some more trees.
Yeah. Okay. So we got another voicemail.
Now, actually, you know what? I do have lumber update.
Okay.
Now that I think about it. Speaking of cutting down trees, there is an enormous amount of mahogany that is now being reclaimed from Florida after the hurricane. So anybody who has always wanted to work with Cuban mahogany, the real stuff, Sweetina mahogany, the stuff that it's like CITES listed appendix one, can't be traded, can't be bought or sold whatsoever. Mm-hmm. This is Florida grown Cuban mahogany. I know that actually Alf Sharp, if you guys know Alf, a period furniture maker,
yeah.
not the Muppet. Sorry, Alf. I regretted it the minute I said it.
Yeah, you sure.
Sorry. Yeah, he actually contacted me at the lumberyard the other day, and he has some of that Cuban mahogany that he's trying to sell. He's got some 14 and 18 inch wide Cuban mahogany. Ooh. So it's out there. If you do a little bit of digging around, I've actually found some stuff on Craigslist as well. So the urban nice. Logging movement, or the post hurricane logging movement, I should say, is alive and well. And there's some interesting stuff coming out of it.
So, great.
There we go.
Okay.
We just made up a lumber update on the fly.
Let's get some.
Perfect. All right. So yeah, we got one from
nice lumber.
There's our show title.
Sample pack.
Some.
All right, let's get to Chris Meek's kickback here.
Hello and greetings, gentlemen. This is Christopher again. I will be your pilot this evening. I just want to let you know how much I appreciate your noble attempt at a podcast. You really have done a fine job. I'm not going to say you did an excellent job by any means. I mean, let's get real. Mark already has the ego of a well-endowed hip-hop rapper guy. We don't need to make that any worse than it already is.
What?
But seriously, for a minute, I just want to let you guys know how much I do appreciate the work you're doing here. You somehow managed to make woodworking interesting and entertaining to listen to. But the thing that really does it for me is your crossover into the nerd culture. You know, I hear references to comic books and video games, Star Wars. I'm pretty sure I heard a reference to Monty Python, if I'm not mistaken. In which case, you might want to explain that to Max. I really don't think he gets it. But seriously, guys, keep up the good work. I enjoy what you're doing. And incidentally, I would like to know, what comic books do you read, and what video games do you play? Interesting, interesting. Now, get back to work. Ugh, glad that's over with. I don't know how much longer I can keep a straight face on that one. Man, you guys do a great job. I love what you do. Well, gag me with a spoon. What a bunch of douchebags. Oh, crap. Is this thing still...
We have the best actors in our audience. It's really good. Yeah. Almost as good as us, actually. Okay. I guess, do we want to answer that question real quick? What do you like to read, Shannon?
Oh, boy. What week is it? Whatever I happen to fall into. I've been reading, actually rereading Why the Last Man again.
Oh, that's so good.
Isn't it, though?
I love that. So good.
Really, it's really good.
It feels too short.
Let's see. I was doing Invincible last week. I've been kind of back to early Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it, 1970 Guardians?
Yeah.
So, like, learning the character that Sylvester Stallone played in the second Guardians movie. Yeah, I've been reading that lately.
Nice.
Good stuff.
I've actually been reading a lot of kids' stuff, because every night we've moved on from, like, regular kids' books at night to
DuckTales. Woo!
Yeah, we're now reading comic books every night on my iPad. So I'm reading a lot of Teen Titans Go, which is, it's actually really, really funny. And the cartoon is hilarious. So a lot of my, like, classic standard woodworking, you know, capes and tights kind of reading is gone by the wayside, because it's all about what Mateo wants to read at this point. Video game wise, I'm playing a lot of Zelda on the Switch right now, and trying to get through that. And what was the thing that just came out? Destiny 2 just came out. So we've been playing a little bit of that too. It's a little bit of everything. So Matt, the funny thing is, you're the youngest in the group. Do you read comics or play video games?
I have never read a comic in my life.
See, I knew this was going to be the answer. What's the deal, man?
And I haven't, I don't know. It's never something I ever did, I guess. Unless you count, like, Archie.
No, we don't count that at all.
I'd be curious to see how prevalent that is across Matt's demographic, though. Just because, like, I got into comics when I was little, because there wasn't really anything else, you know? There was no YouTube. There was no internet to get my entertainment from. So whenever Fantasy Island wasn't on TV, I had nothing else to do, you know?
Be plain.
And with Batman 66 on all the time, it was like, oh, man, I'm going to pick up a Batman comic. And, you know, that was it. And G.I. Joe comics, are you kidding me? Hey-o. I was playing with my G.I. Joe action figures, and then there was a comic that came out.
Dude, I still read G.I. Joe.
Heck yeah.
It's fantastic.
Heck yeah. I've got like 300 issues or so of it.
So the old guys are the comic book readers and the video game players, and Matt's just making wood furniture.
I used to play video games, and then I started doing this full time. I didn't have time for it anymore, and I had kids. And
dude, you make time. You figure it out. You make time for these important things.
I feel bad. So I could be like actually working and like answering someone's email that I won't have time to get to otherwise.
Yeah. Good point. You just make us look bad. That's all. Okay, so let's get to our voicemail questions now. Sweaty Colin called in, has a question about laminating workbenches.
Sweaty Colin.
Hey guys, this is Colin, the sweaty guy from Chicago. I didn't say this last time, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for your answers on the last question. Now, I have another question for you. On the opposite end of woodworking, this one has to do with workbenches. I'm building a new workbench. It's based on the Moravian workbench by Will Myers, and I wanted something that was collapsible, because I live in an apartment. But because I live in an apartment, I don't have a lot of clamps, because I don't have the room to keep them. So laminating up the top was looking difficult. And I was thinking of building some of Shannon's panel clamps, until I came across a segment in Roy Underhill's book where he suggested drilling through the side and putting in threaded rods, and then just bolting the whole mess together. And I've never heard of this. I went through a quick Google search, and I didn't turn up much, so I was curious, what do you guys think of this? Would this be a decent way to get proper clamping pressure for laminating up something like a benchtop? I'd love your guys' opinions. Thanks so much.
This reminds me of the classic butcher block construction.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I was going to say.
Where they've got the threaded rods going through them, so you guys see anything wrong with this? It seems like it would work.
No, I don't see anything wrong with it. What I wonder is, I don't know. I mean, tackle the immediate project. I mean, clamps are something that you're always going to want, right? So now might be a good opportunity to get some. You don't have to have 48 inch wide clamps to do a workbench top. You know, workbench top's about 24 inches wide. So buying the, what is that, 31 inch jets that I've got, those are like probably the most used clamp in my shop.
That's the ideal size.
I mean, I understand. Certainly it's, they are expensive. Parallel clamps are expensive. Bar clamps really aren't that all expensive. If you have no clamps right now, I think it's a perfect opportunity to buy clamps. Yes, the threaded rod thing will work, but on the next project, when it's time to need clamps, maybe you can drill a hole through it and do a threaded rod again.
Projects have holes in them.
Right.
It's a design feature.
And he's going to need a lot of threaded rod to get through that. I'm not hip on the latest prices on threaded rod, but by the time you buy all of those, you probably could have bought one clamp.
Well, the question I have for that is how many do you think you're going to need to do a workbench top? Like one every foot? Is that even enough?
Yeah. And then what are you tightening down? You need something to tighten down. You need a call of some sort. It could just be a board with a hole drilled through it and like a wing nut or something like that. But something's got to apply pressure to the outside. You're not tapping the bench, you know? So all the rod is just providing, you know, the means for which to clamp on either side of it. So you're going to need something else there that's going to, you know, an outlay of cash. It's probably not much. It could just be a 2x4, but still something else to think about. Then you're getting whatever piece of hardware that's actually threading on and clamping, a bolt and a fender washer maybe to give you a little bit of clamping pressure. But I wouldn't just do like the bolt and fender washer right on the workbench. I would want some call to spread out the clamping force, right. So instead of it, because otherwise you need a whole bunch of threaded rod. You need one probably every 12 inches on the bench.
Gotta spread it
out. So if you had a call that could spread it out over maybe 24 inches, then you're still looking at four threaded rods at probably 36 inches long. I'm trying to think. They're cheap.
Yeah, they're not super expensive, but they're not free.
I would say maybe $12, $15 for a 36 inch, 3/4 inch or inch diameter threaded rod.
You know, and we are coming up on clamp sale season.
That's true. Black Friday is coming.
Usually this time of year. Clamps
every year.
This is where you can order clamps and maybe get them by summer because they usually sell out. But keep an eye out. You know, this is the time of year to buy clamps. So
I mean, the easy answer is yes. It's the totally legit way of doing it. But I'm always telling people don't buy tools until you need them. Well, you need them now.
You need them.
And you're going to use that clamp on every project here on out. The other thing is I often don't like the idea of gluing up a workbench all at once. I like gluing it up into smaller sub-assemblies just because there's so much room for error. You know, I mean, I guess unless you're like using a domino or dowels to align all
you've got alignment holes built right in with those threaded rod holes. Come on, it's done.
But here's the other thing. If you drilled the holes exactly so that the threaded rod aligned it, are you going to be able to get the threaded rod back out because you just glued it in place? With all the glue,
counter that with a smaller dowel. No problem.
Just use a hacksaw and saw.
I'm just thinking, like a butcher block, you leave it in there.
That's true.
In case you need to tighten it down.
Until you have another bench top to glue up, and you don't want to buy some more threaded rod.
Then you gotta, you gotta yank those things out. it's so complicated this woodworking thing. Okay, so we've got a question here. This is interesting. I don't know where this joke comes from. Maybe Shannon, you could shed some light on this. But this is for your alter ego, whose name is Keith. He specified that in his email. And he addresses Keith, but I don't know the joke. Is there something with your alter ego?
I don't know.
Okay, well, then this is for Keith.
Hey, guys. Andy here from Missouri. Thanks for the show. My question is for Keith. Hey, Keith. If you had a choice between marrying Khaleesi, Mother of Dragons, or saving all of your silly, precious hand tools from a dragon fire, which would you choose? Thanks. Bye.
Well, aside from insulting your wife, what would you do in this situation, Shannon?
There's not a Keith in Game of Thrones, is there? That seems rather out
Keith,
of place.
Keith, he's a dragon slayer known as Keith.
He's the guy that changes Jon Snow's chamber pot.
That's right.
Right.
Keith,
he comes in and replaces.
He dumps the poo. Yeah. Okay.
I would keep all my hand tools.
I like the question. I just don't understand the Keith thing. You'd keep your hand tools?
Yeah, she scares me.
She seems like she would be a little bit pushy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're talking about marrying, so you're going to have to deal with her for more than a day. And
yeah, I think I might get killed. But yeah,
you could be sacrificial.
True. Yeah,
she's a loose cannon, you know, and she's just about to become even more powerful. And she's got dragons for pets.
Right. That could be cool. But I don't think my dog would get along well with the dragons.
That's right.
There would be lots of barking all the time.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be good. So I'm going to stick to my hand tools.
It's good. Good. Good answer. Okay. So if you want to send us a voicemail, you can do so. Just use the voice memo app on your little telephone thingy in your pocket and email that to woodtalkonline@gmail.com. And we've already done the lumber update, so we can skip that. Let's go into our emails. I got a question here from Kenny, and that's not Shannon's dog. He doesn't know how to type because he's dumb.
Could be.
Is that why?
He's a dumb dog.
He's not dumb. He's got border collie in him.
Most dogs can type. Kenny just can't. I don't know what the problem is. He says, my shop is in a garage like a lot of people, and I'm constantly getting spider webs everywhere, under the bench, table saw, wood rack. Do you have a similar problem? And if so, how do you deal with it? All right, so I never really had this problem in Arizona. I've had other types of infestations, like scorpions, which are always fun. Nice. We've had crickets. That was interesting. But here in Colorado, in the last couple of months, so toward the end of summer, I don't know what happens, but spider webs everywhere. Like in the back, in the fence posts, like every time a fence post comes up, that vertical leg, there's spider webs coming down each side, and it's all around the house, all around the fences, everywhere. I don't know what the deal is with spiders. But anyway, so yeah, I actually have had this happen. And typically what I do is I get the vacuum cleaner and I suck it up. So I don't really think too much about it. This is totally something where if it's really a problem, you could actually get some kind of treatment. I mean, in Arizona, we had a monthly pesticide treatment. I didn't like having pesticides in and around the house, but it was something that was necessary in that area unless we wanted scorpions and all kinds of little beasties running around the house all the time. So you could get a service and just have them do the shop, and they will spray and do the perimeter and the outside of the home, and that could definitely protect you. But you got to be okay with, you know, pesticides. So for me, it's not worth it right now. Nothing that I've seen scares me enough or gives me the sort of hint that this might be a larger problem at work. So until that happens, I'll just continue to suck it up with my vacuum cleaner and wait for winter to kill these things. But yeah, again, pesticides and things like that can work, but you know, call a company and get them to spray in the shop if it's really that problematic for you. Do you guys have any major pest issues in the shop? Or have you?
I guess they're spider webs. I mean, they're some sort of web type thing. I don't actually see a lot of spiders.
They're almost cobwebby.
Yeah.
Very fine. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And the way I handle that, it was usually an indication of a tool that I just wasn't using anymore. So I usually sold it.
It's your table saw was covered with them.
It
looked like a cocoon.
I did a live broadcast last night for the Renaissance Woodworker, and I was talking about how I never use my tail vise anymore. If you look into the hole on my workbench, there's so many cobwebs wrapped around the vise screw in there. So yeah, it's just a sign that it's time to rip the tail vise out and sell it. So
there you go.
It's an indicator.
That's good.
There are helpful friends, the spiders, telling you what you don't need anymore.
Maybe you could just get some like birds to hang out in your shop.
I had that happen. Spiders. There was bird crap everywhere.
Oh.
The bird flew in the garage door and it didn't know how to get out. And it kept like beating against the back window and just freaking out and just crapping everywhere. I was like, stop it.
Get out of here, you bird.
Quit crapping on my tools.
Oh, that's terrible. Matt, you ever had any pests in the shop?
In the summer, it's really prevalent. I get a lot of insects in the shop. If I leave the doors open at night with the lights on, they just come right down in there.
Yeah.
And if I leave the shop and I open the door, all the bugs up against the glass, they all come flying in. So I usually have to deal with a lot of mosquitoes and a lot of like house flies, things like that. So the cobwebs or spider webs are kind of nice because that catches them. And I also have a small bug zapper out there, which kind of takes care of the flying things. Mm-hmm. Spiders don't really bother me a whole lot. Like I said, I kind of like seeing the other insects in their webs. It kind of makes me feel happy. And then, at some point, I'll just kind of, when I feel like cleaning the shop, I just vacuum up the spider webs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. They are part of the pest control ecosystem.
Yeah.
So there's a good argument for leaving them there if they're not bothering you.
Kind of fun to like direct the flies into the net instead of webs, and then they're stuck and you can watch them die.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
You're that spider's biggest fan.
You used a magnifying glass on anthills when you were a kid, didn't you, Matt?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I like killing things. Okay. Matt, I think you're up.
Oh, wow. Look at this. This is from Jen. She says, we're rehabbing an old workbench, and my question is about finishing. Hmm. The online answers are convoluted at best, and I wanted expert opinions. But since I have access to you guys, I'll ask here.
You had to see that one coming. Come on.
It's like I didn't even read that part of the question, and I was going to make that joke, and she did it for me. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Should I use boiled linseed oil, Danish oil? Do you have a different suggestion? Love you guys. Love the show. Thank you. So I thought this would be kind of interesting because we all have workbenches, and we all have finish on them. So my approach to my workbench was when I finished it, I'm like, what do I have like an old can of that I need to get rid of? So my workbench is finished in outdoor oil because that's what I had. I didn't plan on using it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a utility thing. It's good just point. There. So when I spill glue on it, it won't stick.
I've got like a 10-year-old can of outdoor oil that would be perfect for that sitting over here. Good idea.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a good way to use up that last little bit of finish in the can.
Would you guys agree with the fact that most people overthink this?
Yep.
Yes, most definitely.
Okay.
No question. I do not put finish on my bench. I did not finish my bench. It is finished now because, like, you know how you apply that last coat and there's still a little bit on the brush or still a little bit in the rag? That wipes on the bench right there.
There you go.
All of my jigs, my shooting boards, all the stuff gets a little wiped down at that point. You know, I've got bits of milk paint on my bench. I've got some shellac down here. There's some varnish on the other side. Yeah, it's
like a finishing swatch sample for Ash.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. This is what Ash looks like under Armor Seal. And here's what it looks like under Endurovar.
Right.
Here is a nice garnet shellac. This is a 3-pound cut.
It's milk paint.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the workbench is going to get beat up if you're using it. And you don't want too much of a film finish. It kind of sort of defeats the purpose of having a nice grippy work surface and something that would look terrible as soon as it gets, you know, hit with a wayward screw or a wayward chisel. So a light duty, easily refreshed finish is probably your best bet. So I think any of the ones she's, you know, thinking about are probably fine. But honestly, for me, Danish oil, which is a lot like that outdoor oil formulation, is probably very much like a Danish oil, is a good oil varnish blend, I think is a great choice. And a couple of coats will do you, and then start using it and then reapply as needed when needed.
Yeah, because remember, if you ever reflatten your bench, you're just going to take off all the finish.
There goes all the finish. Oh, boy, I need to do that, actually. I got a flattening in my future. Shannon, you're up.
Yeah. I question, do you really need to reflatten the bench?
No, I don't.
Somebody asked me that question the other day, and I took a straight edge to my bench, specifically saying the last time I flattened my bench is when Mark Spagnuolo asked me to flatten it for his Rubo
can
build.
You demo that for me?
He wanted me to do it by hand, so I did a video on that. That was the last time I flattened my bench. It's still flat.
I remember that. So I said, Shannon, could you do a demonstration of flattening with hand tools? And all I heard was, but I got the video out of him, so that was good.
Just because it's you.
Good stuff.
Right, we've got another email here that I'm not quite sure what's going on. It's kind of like the Keith comment. So this is from Sean. He says, gentlemen, Nair for Men actor and Rigatone Spagnuolo. So I know who Rigatone Spagnuolo is.
Yeah, I get
Nair
that.
For Men actor. Is that Matt? And am I the gentleman? I don't know.
Nair
because
for
I'm pretty hairless, so I could also be a Nair for Men actor.
I don't think the Nair for Men actor would be Matt because he's way too hairy.
It's got to be.
Unless it's like ironic.
Yeah. So you're the gentleman.
See, and that's what throws me off because Matt, gentleman? Nah. Anyway, Sean says, I'm looking for a stupidly stable hardwood. It'll be used for making a bracket for a shop made rip fence. So dimensional stability is my biggest concern. What are some good species that I might actually find here in Denver? I'd like to thank Shannon in advance for his well thought out answer. Let's hope I can hear it through the other two's giggling. Go Buffs. Go Buffs. Way to hear that. He put that in the end there. And hey, look. Colorado, University of Colorado t-shirt for those that are watching the live stream right now.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is. I'll sing the fight song for you guys later. It'd be good.
Please do.
So the most dimensionally stable species that I know is Ipe. But here's the thing. You want to look at the most of the technical specs, if you go to the Wood database, if you actually go to my company site at McIlvain.com, you'll see the tech specs on each product page. You'll see tangential movement, you'll see radial movement, and those will be percentage numbers. And then most of them will have a TR ratio number. That's tangential to radial ratio. ePay is, most places will print it at 1.1, one being perfectly isometric. It moves the same in both directions. ePay is actually less than 1.1, but people just round up. It moves almost the same in both directions. So it's not that you're looking for a wood that moves very little. You're looking for wood that moves the same in both tangential and radially. So ePay is probably the most common one. You're certainly going to be able to find that in Denver. Anybody who sells decking is going to have ePay. But it is harder than rock. It's a Janka hardness of 3,600 some pounds per square inch. But it doesn't mean that you can't work with it. I know lots of people who build benches and stuff out of it. That would be the easiest thing. But if you're just curious, go over to the Wood database and look up that TR number, or look for TR ratios of one, and see what Google yields for you. More than likely, you're going to find all kinds of species, and it all just comes down to what can I actually obtain, which is why I go back to eBay.
Okay. Wonderful.
There was definitely not enough giggling in the background. Let's okay. Do that again.
That's enough just from Mark.
Yeah, do it one more time. I think I more than made up for it.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay, do you...
That's definitely not your thing. No, it's the giggling to me.
Okay, fine. You're the giggler. Okay, so we have a quick question I threw in here as a co-answer question. This is from Amanda at Rustic Duck Furniture. This is a content question, so if you don't like that stuff, you could probably... It's the last question of the show, so you can turn it off now if you want to. In the last episode, just warning people, I know they don't like it. Just giving them a heads up. In the last episode, Mark mentioned getting rid of his K-Pex in part to be able to be more relatable to his audience. My question is that, as content creators, how do you decide... Oh, man, this single column thing is driving me nuts. I got to fix this. Let's see. Where is it? My question is, as content creators, how do you decide what level to keep your content at to be able to appeal to the masses? You all have a wealth of experience and talent. Do you find that sometimes you have to pare it down? Or do you find it difficult if when filming a project as a tutorial, the experience in you would use XYZ tool or finish, but then maybe have to change your method because Joe Public is not likely to have that? Thanks in advance. Love the show. Well, I could say personally all the time, this is something I always think about. The way I would woodwork and the tools I would use to do it would look very different if I didn't have a camera over my shoulder constantly. I've established a business that can afford certain equipment. If I wanted to go to that level, that equipment would make it easier, potentially more fun, and I would certainly be able to get certain things done in a much simpler way. But it's a money question. It would put me and outpace the budget of most of my audience. But there is a limit. So I know there are a lot of folks, there's a lot of channels out there who very much appeal to the weekend woodworker who is going and buying, you know, I don't want to disparage any tool brands, but your lower grade tool brands and just getting things done. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that gets to a point where I'm no longer happy doing this. So even though I know I might actually get a bigger audience if I like directly appealed to that crowd, I have to draw a personal limit at a certain level that I find no longer fun. So I'm sure you guys do this to some extent, maybe not as much as me. I don't know. What's your perspective on it? Let's go to Matt.
I guess I'm almost kind of more opposite of you. I just do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole reason I kind of got into content creation, was to be able to work the way I want to with the tools that I have, the tools I want to use, and kind of go from there. I mean, I have delayed some of the tool upgrades. I could have afforded things a long time ago, or I could have put those in place a long time ago. I just haven't done it, like put a Shelix head in my planer, or like put a... I did the dust collector thing, so I have a Cyclone coming finally.
You're just waiting for someone to send it to you for free.
No, I'm waiting for someone to stand for me for free and pay me to take it.
You know,
come
I mean,
on,
our version
You're
of
an
free.
Amateur.
Our version of free. Yeah. No, I get it. Well, no, see, I respect that. Now, is there a point, let's say, who wouldn't want a giant, big, like wide belt sander? Like something like hardcore, right? Or maybe even at the William Ng School, I always go back to this Williams Felder planer that has a digital, like, automatic lift system in it. So you could dial into the nearest, like, thousandth how thick you want your material. And the stuff comes out of it doesn't even need to go through the sander. It's like it's been not sanded to 220, but hand planed is the quality of the surface that comes out of this thing. So is there a point where you would not let that come into your shop? For show reasons or for content reasons.
Well, yeah.
No. Well, for Shannon.
but you know what? That's a good point, because I've had stuff like that, like, has come my way, like power tools that would be really beneficial, you know, in a hand tool shop, and it's just not the way I want to work. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a major. I would be called a sellout, and I would have to say you're absolutely right, because I wouldn't really use this tool. It's not the way I like to work. But bringing it into the shop just to show it wouldn't do it.
Okay, fair enough. So anything else you guys want to add to that, or should we just close off the show?
Let's just pinch it off.
Okay, so if you want to leave us a review in iTunes, we appreciate that. That always helps. Just go to the iTunes store, look us up, and click on ratings and reviews. And let's see what else. You can help us out on Patreon, patreon.com/woodtalk, or you could buy a t-shirt that says Wood Talk on it. It's pretty cool. It's at twwstore.com. Shannon, why don't you give them the contact info, and we'll get out of here.
I'd love to. If you have comments, questions, or topic suggestions, there are lots of ways to get it in our earballs. You can send us a voicemail. If you use your voice memo app, send that to woodtalkonline@gmail.com. You can use our contact form at woodtalkshow.com/contact, or just go to this episode on woodtalkshow.com and leave a comment at the bottom. We're everywhere you want to be. We're at Instagram. We're in Twitter. Both of those at Wood Talk Show. We're also on the Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we are. All right. That's a good show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
See you. Bye.
Goodbye to you.